Goodness gravy, I don't even know where to begin with this week's edition of Grape Encounters Radio. I will tell you that I'm your host, David Wilson, for the next hour, and I appreciate all of you that are listening to us on the internet, and I am especially grateful for our terrestrial radio listeners on the Central Coast. It's going to be a really fun show today. Normally, I like to have three or four guests on the show, but today it's just going to be one very, very, very special person. Wes Hagen is going to be on the show, and we're going to keep him on for a good long time, and I just want to shoot the breeze with Wes. A lot of people in the Central Coast region refer to Wes as the Google of wine, and you'll certainly understand why when you get a chance to listen in on our conversation. He is also the winemaker at the Clopepe Winery in the Santa Rita Hills. If you're not familiar with the Clopepe wines, you might want to try to seek them out. You might have to buy them online. But these wines, particularly the Pinots, are absolutely world-class, highly acclaimed, and they're doing an amazing job there. Wes was one of the authors of the Santa Rita Hills AVA, also the author of the Happy Canyon AVA on the Central Coast, and is now working on the inimitable Ballard Canyon AVA. So he's a guy that's very, very involved in a very big way with the wine industry, and I think you'll find him very interesting. He's also quite a Renaissance man. But before we get into that, a lot of people have been talking about a bill in Congress. It's H.R. 5034, and a lot of the boutique winemakers are feeling very threatened by this. You know, it's one of those things where sometimes it's hard to really understand how these measures really do affect us. I thought I would share with you an article in the April 28th edition of Wine Spectator, and they're talking about this. They're certainly concerned. Robert Taylor writes in the article, he says, the battle over whether consumers can order wine directly from wineries is moving to the halls of the U.S. Capitol. Members of Congress yesterday introduced a bill, H.R. 5034, that could end direct shipping of wine and other forms of alcohol in the United States, or at least put a major roadblock in front of lawsuits by consumers and wineries trying to reduce restrictions on direct shipping. He goes on to write that Wine Spectator obtained a copy of a draft of the bill on Wednesday, which was crafted by the, get this, National Beer Wholesalers Association, the NBWA. It would strengthen state government's control of alcohol sales, allowing them to protect the three-tier system of distribution while putting a much greater burden on people challenging it. Anyway, they go on later in the articles to state that state leaders and alcohol wholesalers are arguing that a law is needed to prevent frivolous lawsuits and to allow states to maintain firm control of sales and prevent alcoholism and underage drinking. Critics, however, argue that the bill would allow wholesalers to protect their turf from competition and prevent consumers from being able to buy wines and other alcoholic beverages, get this, not carried by local wholesalers. An original draft of the bill contained an antitrust exemption for wholesalers, but that was struck from its language. Here's a quote. It says, "The whole idea behind the bill is to make it prohibitively difficult for wineries and consumers to challenge discriminatory and irrational laws that have little or nothing to do with the protection of the public." And that's a statement from a Tracy Jennison, who is with a law firm of Kirkland and Ellis. Jennison has been the lead attorney on many direct shipping lawsuits that have resulted in state alcohol laws being overturned. So what's the fear here? Well, the fear is that our friends who operate boutique wineries will no longer be able to ship wine directly to you. They're going to actually have to go through a distributor. There's going to have to be a middleman involved. And if you remember a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about this very thing. We were talking with Keith Sarlos over at Sarlos & Sons, and he was making a big point of the fact that because they don't use distributors, because they don't distribute in restaurants, they don't sell to wholesalers, that they can offer a very great wine wine at a reasonable price by selling it directly to you, either on the internet or at the tasting room. And folks, I think that's a great thing. That's an incredibly great thing. So if in fact this legislation is going to have that effect of preventing our boutique winemakers from selling directly to you, then I say let's shoot this baby down. And you can Google HR 5034 and figure out where to write your congressman. And there's also a pretty big Facebook group that exists out there right now that, you know, just Google it there and join the throngs of people who want to shoot this piece of legislation down. In my book, I don't think we need any more legislation. I think the alcohol and beverage laws are working just fine as they are. One of the things I also wanted to talk about was, you know, something that I think about a lot these past weeks, and it's the state of the Chilean wine industry. I have to tell you, you know, love California wines, love wines from all over the world, but I've become really super fond of the wines that are being made in Chile, especially because they represent an incredibly good value. And of course, they had an incredibly devastating earthquake there, and it was speculated that it would really do immeasurable damage to the Chilean wine industry. But I wanted to share with you something that I came across. It's the Wines of Chile blog. There's a website called winesofchile.org. You might check it out. And the author is the editor, Margaret Snook. And here's what she writes. She says, as everyone has heard by now, Chile's wine industry was indeed affected by the February 27th earthquake. Much has been published about it, although not all of it has been on target. As is understandable, there was considerable panic and worry in the earliest days following the quake. And, as in human nature, many people were quick to shout disaster. Let's face it, she writes, toppled tanks, broken barrels, and crumpled buildings make a pretty impressive sight, not to mention a big mess. But once the cleanup started, the true picture began to come into focus. And although the situation was rough, very rough, fortunately, things were really not as globally bad as first imagined. And I am so, so glad to hear that, because I think it would be an absolute tragedy if there was a disruption of the flow of these incredible wines from Chile. One of the Chilean winemakers made a really interesting point in this article. He says, if someone cuts his hand, it will bleed a lot and may seem very, very serious. We might even think he's going to lose his hand altogether. But once you get the guy cleaned up and calmed down, it usually becomes clear that he only needs a few stitches. What happened in the wine industry was somewhat similar. After all, a broken barrel of wine will make a tremendous mess, but in the end, it's just 225 liters. I absolutely love that. There is one last thing that author Snook writes at the end of the article, and I love this. She actually went over there and ran around with a photographer, and she writes, it was a most humbling experience, and it became clearer than ever that Chile's vast beauty, the abrupt and craggy Andes Mountains that form the country's backbone, the Atacama, that scorching driest of dry deserts in the world, the breathtaking coastline that receives the full force of an ocean that's anything but Pacific, the volcanoes, hot springs, geysers, glaciers, fjords, lakes, rivers, and valleys, and so much more, all of it is there through some act of Mother Earth's mighty hand, a hand that opens to offer up her bounty, but that also, on occasion, deftly crushes all that humankind has worked to build. And then she concludes, Chileans are a hardy breed. No one reaches adulthood without having experienced a major earthquake. And given that they come about every 25 years, most people will go through two or three in their lifetime. Chile knows from earthquakes, and Chileans know that they are a fact of life, and that there's just one way to deal with them. Pick yourself up. Give thanks for what you still have, roll up your sleeves, and start to rebuild and make it better and stronger the next time around. This is such a great column by Margaret Snook. Great blog, Wines of Chile. Check in with these guys because they can keep you abreast of what's going on with that industry. But boy, they should definitely be in our thoughts and prayers because they're doing a great job there. and making fantastic wines. Okay, when we come back, it's going to be our friend Wes Hagen from Clopepe Vineyards, but he's a lot more than that. He's a renowned wine judge. He is a Renaissance man, and he is one of the most interesting and well-informed people in the wine business when we return with more Grape Encounters Radio. Hey, talk about friends with benefits. It really benefits you to become our friend on Facebook. So I want to encourage you to go over to the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page and join the rest of the people there who are taking advantage of the special opportunities that we pass along to our fans. We will tell you about opportunities to buy wine at special prices. These opportunities come from some of our winemaking friends. We'll tell you about special events, and we'll invite you to private parties. So it's the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page. You don't want to miss out on the opportunities that we pass along there. Also, we'd like to steer you to the Grape Encounters Radio webpage. It's grapeencountersradio.com. And there you will find a complete archive of all of our shows. And there's a nice description of each show. So if you find a topic of interest, you can listen online or you can download a podcast. We also want your opinion, good, bad, or indifferent. So if you've got some ideas about the show, feel free to post them on Facebook or send us a private message on Facebook. Or you can drop us a line through the Grape Encounters Radio website. We really want to know what you'd like us to talk about, what you agree with, what you disagree with. We just want to hear from you. So it's Grape Encounters on Facebook, and it's Grape Encounters on the web at grapeencountersradio.com. And now back to more Grape Encounters. And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I have to tell you, I have been looking forward to this interview literally all week. I've been dying to talk to our friend Wes Hagen, who is known for a lot more than just winemaking. Wes is the winemaker out at Clopepe in the Santa Rita Hills, but also a guy that people refer to as the Google of wine in his neighborhood. And Wes, thank you for being on the show. I'm dying to talk to you about a bunch of stuff.
Great. And I have to give a little caveat. As last time when someone called me the Google of wine, I said it's perfectly appropriate because when you ask me a question, not only do you get the response you're looking for, but 20 other responses you probably find useless.
That's probably true. Have you ever found yourself lacking words for anything?
Well, you know, I try to follow the old Chinese aphorism that to admit ignorance is wise. So if I don't know something, I do try to say that I'm not sure. But one nice thing about a liberal arts education, besides dinner parties and Jeopardy, we can usually make a pretty good assumption on stuff that usually will end up somewhat correct about 75% of the time.
Well, I went through college on a debate scholarship, and if there's one thing that I learned, it's that if you don't know the answer to something, it's probably best that you don't make it up, because in those circles, there's going to be somebody that's going to call you out on the carpet, and you're just going to be embarrassed by it. But in the wine business, particular, though, and especially among sort of novice wine drinkers, there's a lot of making up that goes on. And
That's what's so fun about wine is it's totally subjective. You can't be objective about wine. You can't taste 2 million wines a year. You can't taste every region. You can't be an expert on Hungary and Spain and Santa Barbara. We have to choose our favorites. And in a world where everything is supposed to be objective and fair, wine is one of those last things that we can be subjective and opinionated about. And I think that's and it can't in any rational discourse, you can't be put down because of the style of wine you like. If you stand up for any wine you like, everyone should respect that.
Well, right, except that there are a lot of people who refuse to accept wine as being a subjective thing. And those are the people that are prone to be arguing in the tasting rooms because they know better.
And I will admit that I believe that fundamentalism in anything is the greatest enemy to humanity.
Okay. If you're just joining us, folks, it's a favorite guest of Grape Encounters Radio, Wes Hagen on the line. I'm David Wilson, your host. Wes is up in the Santa Rita Hills as we speak, as
Absolutely.
A matter of fact.
Looking out on a nice sort of cloudy, windy, cool day, looking at the vines sway in the wind, some sheep nibbling on my front lawn. It's a beautiful thing.
You're like the total earthy guy. You like things pure, and I don't even know how to describe it, whole and gritty. I mean, you're not a guy that would walk into a place that sells coffee and have them grind it for you. That would make your skin crawl, right?
I'd like to take my beans home and roast them, and I'm pretty picky about my coffee, but I think the best attitude to have is that of the sort of the Epicurean, which is we always prefer to eat and drink the best, but whatever's in front of us, we should pretend that it's the greatest thing that we've ever eaten, because that should be our attitude, that every breath on this planet is a miracle, and we just should go through life not being critics. You know, I think it was Oscar Wilde who called a critic a one-legged man trying to teach the world to run. And I think that's exactly what I feel like. Criticism should be a suggestion on how to make things better, and not someone trying to posit their style on a thing that
okay, so I've got you kind of wrong then, definitely, because I've always seen you as a purist who always wants to, especially when it comes to consuming food and wines, always go after, you know, the best of the best. But what you're saying is if all you've got is a box of Chicken McNuggets, then savor them and enjoy them for what they are.
Absolutely, and
right.
You know,
that's cool.
Like I said, there's always a situation where you drink a worse wine with a better friend and the wine tastes better. So I'd say there's so many things that go into the experience of eating and drinking that to say one thing matters and it has to be a first growth Bordeaux, it has to be a Premier Cru, a Grand Cru Burgundy, that's ridiculous. There's beautiful, simple pleasure wines, and there's wines that really require some thought and some intensity, but there's no reason, if you just drink the greatest wines of the world every night, you lose perspective. Just like, you know, if you're sleeping with a different supermodel every night, you know, you're going to miss out on a lot of things about women. So everything in balance, everything, you know, all things in moderation, including moderation.
I'm not touching the supermodel analogy there.
Oh, come on, you want to touch the supermodel?
Well, okay. So I'm having a discussion with a friend last night, right along these lines, and we were talking about the fact. You go out and you buy let's say, $70 to $100 bottle of wine, which in most people's book is an expensive bottle of wine.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe not so much for you winemakers, but, you know, for the average Joe, okay, so that's, in most people's mind, a special occasion wine.
Sure.
But we were talking about, you know, how come you don't go and buy a really great bottle of wine and then savor it with an In-N-Out burger? You know, which is as good as a burger gets for a lot of people.
Sure. You know, I think...
What's the aversion to doing that?
You know, I think that there is a right wine for every occasion. And, you know, one of the last scenes in Sideways where he busts open a 1961 Cheval Blanc with a burger at his local burger joint in San Diego. I think that was Miles. And that, I think, is a moment that you can actually have an epiphany that a great wine could be savored at any moment. A special occasion is what you make it, and I think a great bottle of wine can make it an occasion special. So, you know, if you have the finances to afford, you know, beautiful wine with a simple meal, that's great. I think most people think that a great bottle of wine deserves a great meal, whether that's just something simple and made at home with care and love and passion, or at a starred Michelin restaurant. It doesn't matter. We got to get out of this mindset that a great bottle of wine has to be wait for a great occasion. Again, I think that occasion is made by a great bottle of wine. Same thing with sparkling wine. My wife loves sparkling wine, so we try to open sparkling wine whenever we can. And we feel a little special and celebratory when we do so. So I would love to suggest to our listeners that that bottle in the back of the cellar that you've been waiting for. You know, we don't know how long we're going to be on this earth. We don't know when that bus with our name on it is going to be coming around a corner that we don't see.
Yeah, what are we saving it for?
Let's not wait for it. Let's enjoy the wine while we can.
Well, and, you know, you and I had a running joke some time ago that it really isn't a joke for me. There are times where I just want to do the wine and maybe skip the meal.
Yeah.
I don't think that makes me an alcoholic. It makes me somebody who...
No, it makes you European.
Yeah, and there are times when the wine is just so good, I don't want any interference from anything else. And I just want to savor and enjoy the wine by itself and essentially make a meal out of the wine.
We're probably a little bit different on that. There's not a lot of wines that I like as either a meal substitute or a cocktail. I generally drink beer and spirits and cocktails when I'm not eating. And when I'm eating, it's almost always wine. And I consider wine to be an accompaniment with food, and I consider it usually to be something that if I'm just sitting at the computer late at night working on something and I want to drink, I may have a little scotch or something like that. Wine to me seems to be more focused on the food and friends and social and culinary aspects of my life. But I fully understand a lot of people when they get home from work, they like the first thing they do, open a bottle of wine, have a glass, relax, get back into sort of out of that state of mind of being go, 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 work, 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 take a moment to relax, and then the last three or four, you know, the last three glasses of wine kind of happen with dinner, or maybe, you know, a glass is left over in the bottle and is drunk the next day when they come home from work. And I think that's, you know, you can use wine as sort of a medicine. You can use wine with food. You can use wine to make yourself feel more comfortable in a social setting. You can use wine to try to make yourself look a little bit better on a first date. You know, like Homer Simpson said, alcohol is the source of and the solution to all the world's problems.
We are definitely digressing here. Well, that's the whole point of this show. And it's like I got accused of being a California wine snob by somebody who is up in the northern states. And I was so stunned by that because I am so not a wine snob, you know, just by virtue of the comment that I just made about just making the bottle of wine a meal, you know, right. That's so taboo to so many people and so inappropriate. And I didn't, by the way, mean to say that wine was the equivalent of a meal replacement bar. I was just simply saying there's sometimes where I just want it to be all about that wine.
You know, wine's beautifully contextual. I mean, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, a glass of wine just makes the clouds look a little prettier, makes the hills look a little greener. You know, it makes your mate look a little sexier. I mean, it really is a miracle. I mean, you think about all the miracles that kind of went, and I'm not a religious guy, but I mean, you look at the fact that grapes produce a waxy substance naturally that attract the same yeast that turn sugar into alcohol. That's a miracle. The fact that grapes, you know, basically became, in the last 10,000 years, became hermaphroditic, were able to be grown in just about anywhere in the world, sort of between, about the 30th parallel and the 48th parallel. So we can grow wine in almost, you know, the entire United States. It all comes together to make you think, wow, you know, nature wants us to be happy. Nature wants us to drink wine.
Oh, okay, we're going to have to hold that thought, Wes, because we have to go to commercials. But we will be right back with more Grape Encounters Radio and our guest, Wes Hagen, the Google of wine, in just a minute. Stay tuned. Hey, if you want more Grape Encounters Radio, I want to direct you to our website. It's grapeencountersradio.com. And there you will find a complete archive of all of our shows and fairly detailed descriptions of each show's content. So you can actually download a podcast there or you can listen to it online if you'd like to. We'd also like you to join us on Facebook. We've got a nice Facebook group page. It is Grape Encounters Radio, of course, and all you got to do is do a search there on Facebook, and please become our Facebook friend, because we do send out invitations to special events and try to pass along special opportunities from winemakers, restaurants, whatever. So we'd certainly like to have you there on the Facebook page. Also, on either the Facebook page or through our email link on grapeencountersradio.com, let us know topics that you'd like to discuss or have us discuss on the radio, and we'd be happy to try to accommodate that. And also, if you have some sort of objection to something that we've said, or you want to share your thoughts, or you're in agreement with something that we've talked about, please post your comments there so that we can read them on the air later on. At any rate, we really appreciate you listening to Grape Encounters Radio, and we're back with more in just a second.
Back
Back with Grape Encounters Radio, David Wilson here. So lucky to have on the phone because he is hard to pin down. He's hard to find. Wes Hagen of Clopepe Vineyards. But more than just that, the author or co-author of a couple of AVAs on the Central Coast, right? It's not in the Central Coast.
You know, we're on the Central Coast. We're in the Central Coast. I'm not too worried.
I struggle with that, on or in, all the time, but it feels better to say on the coast. And working on a third AVA right now, right?
Well, yeah, it looks like we're going to fire up the petition process for Ballard Canyon, which is, I think, going to be sort of my third and final AVA petition project, working with, you know, the great Sarlos family, the folks up at Larner Vineyards, Stoltman, Rusak, and all the great little vineyards tucked up. Just if you're going past the hitching post in Buellton, if you turn left instead of right, which is hard to do when you smell those steaks, but if you do turn left, you go up Ballard Canyon, and Ballard Canyon is an extraordinarily unique little geology up there. And it's, I mean, the magic is usually found, I think, in most of the Rhone varietals, the whites mainly being Viognier, Marsan, Roussan, and the reds being Syrah, Mouvet, and Grenache. But they're really doing some amazing things up in Ballard Canyon, and I kind of see the future of Santa Barbara, really, and the greatest wines coming out of the three what I call micro AVAs, which is the Santa Rita Hills for Burgundian varietals like Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, Happy Canyon, which will probably be known as probably the best Sauvignon Blanc in the state, great Cabernets, great Merlots, all of the Bordeaux varieties, and then up Ballard Canyon will be a great future AVA for Rhone varietals, because I think it's a little cooler than some of the other areas, and it makes the wines a little more structured and a little more special. And I'm looking forward to actually digging in and learning as much about the geology of the region as I have with previous petitions for Happy Canyon of Santa Barbara and the Santa Rita Hills.
You know, for about 15 years, there are a group of us that have participated, I think it's got to be 15 years, participated in the Solvang bicycle rides. You know, that, and they cover all of that territory, and they also cover the Fox and Canyon area as well. And it's amazing over the years, you know, when you ride a bicycle, it's different than driving in a car where you just kind of swoosh past things very quickly. But on a bicycle, you get to study every square inch of the terrain and see what's really going on. It's amazing to me, Ballard Canyon, Happy Canyon, and certainly where you're at, the Santa Rita Hills, just how much growth that area has seen and how little by little it's you see, you know, regular food crops coming out and grape crops going in. It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, I don't want to use the word development too loudly in the Santa Barbara County because the county might shut us down, but it's been a sustainable growth. You know, you're not seeing sort of this napification where suddenly all the hillsides are gone and there's huge, you know, gaps. I think one thing we need to make sure people are very clear about, especially in Santa Barbara, is that vineyard operations are very low impact as far as the use of chemicals and runoff.
Right.
It's definitely one of the most low-impact agricultural things that we can. And also remember, obviously, that the more farms that are out here and the more sustainable these farms become, especially in the times of big factory farms taking over, it's almost impossible for a small family farm to even survive today, that vineyards are taking up the slack to keep this land from becoming sort of another concrete jungle.
Well, so but a lot of that land is land that for most of the year is very dusty, dry, and desolate, and I would call this greenification, if anything. It's really,
grapevines do a hell of a job making beautiful oxygen, and full canopy of grapes, to me, I guess I have to kind of get out of my own sort of ideas about what I love to try to understand how someone could drive down Highway 246 or Santa Rosa Road and see the beautiful geometry of the vineyards, you know, stretching up into the hills and this beautiful green color and these beautiful green lines of foliage and think, gosh, you know, this is horrible. This is something that really should not
happen. You've raped the land, yes. It's not raping the land. It's graping the land. That's it.
I totally agree. And, you know, if I was a piece of dirt, I would want to speak through Pinot Noir, period. I mean, there's no greater agricultural commodity except probably white truffles and Alba, you know, than Pinot Noir. It's like, what a blessing that a soil can grow a grape that is so expressive, that can go into a bottle of wine, that can make people so happy. And I can't imagine how dirt would be happier than being sort of caressed by the little root hairs of Pinot Noir and having that relationship with a vine that really wants to go out there and strut its stuff and that soil's pedigree.
Oh my gosh, this is getting so deep. I think maybe next week we're going to interview some dirt on the air and get a firsthand opinion.
There's a lot of microbes down there. It'll probably kind of sound like just a strange humming sound.
Maybe we can find some articulate dirt to put on the show.
Animal communicators. We need to have someone who can pretend to speak to the soil. I'm sure there's got to be some whacked out person somewhere out there that says that they can speak through the soil.
You mean like the dirt whisperer?
The dirt whisperer. God, I just figured it out. If people will pay animal communicators, I could be the dirt whisperer. We're inventing new things as we go along.
You know what? So the last few weeks, I've gotten into these just sort of free-form conversations with guys like you. And next thing you know, I start getting all these emails and stuff from people who find things to take exception with in the conversations. And I absolutely wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
You got
about,
it.
Well, I wanted you to help me out here on some of the controversies that I've stirred up.
I'll do everything I can to complete them and tick off everybody else.
Well, the worst of which is the screw cap controversy, and I don't even know if I can call it a controversy, but if you listen to last week's show, or especially the week before last, you know Seattle Wine Gal, you know,
who's, sure.
You know, she's sort of the wine maven up in the Pacific Northwest, really has a huge following. She's 30 years old. People
Great
love
tweets. I follow her tweets all the time. When they pop up, I read them.
People love what she has to say, and, you know, she drinks wine right out of the bottle, and she doesn't really care. Anyway, we were talking about boxed wines and screw caps, and I kind of cringed at it, not because I think there's anything particularly bad about it. It's just that, sure. You know, hey, I'm a single guy, and if I'm going to have somebody over for a date, I'm not going to serve them a screw cap wine. I'm just not going to do it. I like the customs that we've created around wine, and I like to cut the foil off. And you know what? If my brothers are over and we're just in a big hurry to have a glass of wine, I could care less. Doesn't matter. And then
I've never had the problem of not being able to get drunk fast enough.
Yeah, sure. Right.
You know, so, I do believe, I look at this from a very neutral perspective. Is in the year 2010, does it make sense putting a piece of a tree in the bottle as a stopper? Well, it does when you look at it from the context of the history and the romance of wine. Is cork the best way to seal a bottle of wine? No. Have the best 10 bottles of wine I've ever drunk in my life come from under a cork? Yes. Are the 10 worst bottles of wine I've ever had come from under a cork? Yes. Is a screw cap a more perfect way of sealing a bottle? Yes. Do what wines age under screw cap? Probably yes. Since 1952, Penfolds has been putting their Grange under screw cap in their own library, and whenever they taste through the wines, they tend to come across and say, the screw cap wines are fresher and they're better. I think that if you look at just from a perspective of the science of oxidation and the science of a wine going bad,
yeah,
the best way for the way Americans drink wine is to have a bag-in-box in their fridge, on their counter, and dispense that wine without that wine being oxidized or having any oxygen content, because as the bag shrinks, there's no oxygen. Now, we did a tasting with a bunch of wine judges of bag-in-box, screw cap, fake cork, and real cork, all from the same wine, same lot, same fermentation, same tank from Hardy's in Australia. And 4 out of 4 wine judges agreed that the freshest young fermentative aromas, which means fruit, the fruitiest wine was the bag-in-box, then the screw cap, then the synthetic, than the cork.
There's no argument, and I probably am kicking a dead horse by even talking about it 3 weeks in a row. There's no argument about the ability of these other packaging methods to protect the wine better than a cork. I'm just this regular guy who likes the ritual. And we had an expert on last week, and I think you probably heard the show. And there was a study done in 07, just a couple of years ago, and there's no reason to think things have changed since then. People unequivocally, for special occasions, for holidays, for romantic settings, for occasions that are important, vastly prefer a cork over a screw cap. And then if it's just everyday wine drinking, then they're a lot looser about it. And that's in this.
And I think that goes back to the idea of the European tradition of it. And I think that, and from an environmental standpoint, let's stay with cork. I mean, those cork forests in Portugal and Spain are absolutely vital habitats for a number of threatened and endangered species. One of the most vocal proponents of staying with cork is actually Prince Charles, who not only probably drinks a lot of good wine, because I suspect that he's got a pretty good cellar, but he's a big believer in maintaining the Portuguese and the Spanish cork forest. So, again, it's all, just like wine, it's all subjective. You know, Plump Jack has been doing wine under a screw cap at $100 a bottle and more for 10 years, and they do something smart. They send out a four-pack with two screw caps and two corks, so you can lay them down for 10 years, open them up, and see what you think.
Okay, all right, okay, but we're running out of time for this segment, so I'm going to have to bring you back because there's something I really got to talk to you about in the next segment. So can you hang on for just 1 second? It's Wes Hagen from Clopepi, the Google of wine to many people. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters in just 1 second. Hey, talk about friends with benefits. It really benefits you to become our friend on Facebook. So I want to encourage you to go over to the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page and join the rest of the people there who are taking advantage of the special opportunities that we pass along to our fans. We will tell you about opportunities to buy wine at special prices. These opportunities come from some of our winemaking friends. We'll tell you about special events, and we'll invite you to private parties. So it's the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group page. You don't want to miss out on the opportunities that we pass along there. Also, we'd like to steer you to the Grape Encounters Radio webpage. It's grapeencountersradio.com. And there you will find a complete archive of all of our shows. And there's a nice description of each show. So if you find a topic of interest, you can listen online or you can download a podcast. We also want your opinion, good, bad, or indifferent. So if you've got some ideas about the show, feel free to post them on Facebook or send us a private message on Facebook. Or you can drop us a line through the Grape Encounters Radio website. We really want to know what you'd like us to talk about, what you agree with, what you disagree with. We just want to hear from you. So it's Grape Encounters on Facebook, and it's Grape Encounters on the web at grapeencountersradio.com. And now back to more Grape Encounters. Okay, I am absolutely chomping at the bit to jump back into this. It's David Wilson with Grape Encounters Radio with one of my very, very, very favorite guests, Wes Hagen. I think, Wes, you're probably the guy I respect most in the wine business, by the way.
Oh, well,
I don't want that to go to your head, but...
You don't know me well enough. Familiarity will finally breed.
No, I just feel like if I have a question, you're the guy I could ask, and you're not going to make me feel stupid answering the question.
Well, but, no, I mean, the more comfortable people are about wine, the more they're going to drink, and that's what it's all about. It's not about what you're drinking, it's just the fact that you're having a glass of wine.
Well, that's the whole point of this show, is that, you know, this show is not for wine snobs, and I define a wine snob who uses their superior knowledge to make somebody else feel bad or feel smaller. I take no offense to somebody who is extremely knowledgeable. That's terrific.
Right.
It's just how you use the knowledge. That's where
wine's
I have a problem.
Supposed to bring us together, not push us apart.
Well, and you know what? I think that people should respect other people's freedom. You know, you're free to drink whatever you want. And if you want to just spend $2 or $5 on a bottle of wine and it makes you happy and you're perfectly content, then, you know, then so be it. If you want to discover more in a wine and you're curious and you think you could have a better experience, then so be it. Do that too, you know. But we all have to enjoy wine in the way that we want to enjoy it. And, you know, I made a great fish dish last night with a big solid red wine. But guess what? The sauce I made on the fish was from jalapenos. And so, despite the fact that it was a fairly light fish, it had a very, very powerful sauce on it that created this wonderful blend, and I couldn't serve a white wine with it to say it wouldn't have worked.
Well, let's stop thinking about our grandfather's rules of matching wine, you know, white wine with fish, red wine with meat. Boy, that's boring. You know, try a Chablis with some barbecue ribs. I mean, get loose, have fun. I mean, the minute we're not having fun with wine, we ask ourselves what we're doing here.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the enclosures for a second.
Yep.
I do cringe at the screw-off cap. I do buy wines with screw-on caps, but I they're for certain occasions, you know, just everyday drinking for me.
Yep.
I have bought your wines with screw-on caps, and I'm perfectly happy to do that. In fact, I was kind of glad one night when I opened up one of yours because I wanted to get to it rather quickly. And so,
you know, I would say for me, I'm trying to. I have an everyday drinking wine called Axis Mundi.
Right, that's the one.
It's a $22 bottle of Syrah from the Sleepy Hollow Vineyard in Santa Lucia Highlands. It's a perfect example of a great place to use a screw cap. It's a wine that's meant to be a serious craft wine, but it's also meant to be a really good value. And the screw cap to me means take it home, crack it, and drink it.
Exactly. It's like going to the refrigerator and pulling the jug of milk out and, you know.
It's meant to be something that's easy, and I do admit there's times when I'm setting up a tasting and I'm cutting the foils and pulling the corks, and then I get to the axis and I just crack it. And I don't have to smell the screw cap to see if there's any TCA on it, you know, any cork taint. It's just, it's easy, it makes sense. And, I mean, there's also, you know, like Chenane up in Oregon, they're using glass. You know, they're using
this
glass
is what I wanted copper. To talk about. This was my next question is, how do you feel about the glass enclosures? I think they're really cool.
Really sexy. They just don't have the technology to put them on the bottling line, which means every single one has to be hand-applied. And that, to me, is a fairly inefficient way of bottling wine.
But I've
also heard that they knock off. And the little tin capsule that they put over it to hold it in place, they still don't have the look that matches our branding. So once they kind of get all that stuff down and there's bottling lines available on the Central Coast that would use the glass, it's recyclable, it's sexy. I love glass. It's a great conversation starter, too. You pull the glass thing. Every single time I open a Chenane wine, everyone wants to see the glass stopper. You know, pass it around, take a look, and then you can just kind of pop it back in the bottle, and it makes a seal. It has a little tiny little silicone gasket.
I think Maryvale is actually doing all their wines that way, as I understand it.
And yeah, you know, there'll always be a place.
It's fantastic.
Always be a place for synthetic closures. It's just all a matter of, to me, the key is the branding and the tradition, the ritual. Everything has to be taken into consideration. Do I use screw caps? Yes. Do I use the new Diam corks, which are kind of a new technology that are TCA-free? Yes, I'll use those as well. Will I use beautiful natural cork? Yes, and I'll buy the best cork I can. The corks I put in Clos Pepi Estate wines are almost a buck a piece. And that is money that goes back to the farmers in Portugal, and I buy the cork from an actual Portuguese company. So they are completely responsible for the cork that they do, and if they sell me bad corks, I won't buy them again.
Yeah. Now, see, going back to that glass stopper, though.
Yep.
The minute I saw that, it reminded me of a beautiful perfume bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, where you know, the kind that a woman would have on her vanity, and you know, you pull the glass stopper out and
having a little drip of wine on it and putting
oh
it on
my
it,
gosh,
your neck.
And imagine that she could actually take the stopper out and just dab a little Syrah on that little spot on her neck.
There's sometimes I smell a wine and I imagine that it could be a perfume, and you know, and there you go. There's the romance. So,
see, yeah, done right, that glass stopper could actually be sexier than a Portuguese cork. Done right. In fact, maybe it needs to have a little handle on the top where you can pull it out, and you know, there's room to grow here.
You bet.
So anyway, I just want to say, and for the record, that the cork is of course very romantic, but there are other options that could be equally or even more romantic. So that's, you know, why take the romance out of wine when you don't have to?
No, and as things progress, each kind of closure will eventually have its proponents, and you know, if you ever, you can always go to the internet wine boards and see these people go back and forth about how long a wine lasts under cap as opposed to under cork. You know, it's all a matter of the style that the winemaker wants to present. And for me right now, if I'm making wines that can lay down 10 or 15 years, I want to put them under a natural cork, because the best bottle-aged wines I've ever had have all come from under a cork. And that's my craft decision, the same way that when it's sort of like, you know, when you're finishing a piece of beautiful handmade furniture, You have to decide, you know, are you going to use brass or polished stainless steel, or what kind of fixtures are you going to put on that piece of furniture as far as little handles to open the drawers. It's an accoutrement. It doesn't really probably affect what's inside the bottle as much as we'd like to think. It's just one of these things that we like to discuss as we drink wine and look for something to to be contentious over.
Okay, well, Wes, we have about 3 minutes left, and what I wanted to talk about next is this. Even though our show emanates from the Central Coast, I just always wanted to be clear to all of our listeners that now catch us online all over the world, literally. You know, we're not all about the Central Coast. It just happens to be our home. And we do, in fact, love wines from all over the world. And as you know from previous conversations, I would love to go to every state in this country and find some good wines and talk about them, you know, on the air, because there are cool wines being made everywhere. And I got slammed by somebody a week or so ago saying that I was a California wine snob because I was only talking about California wines, and that comment was coming from Oregon and Washington. And I love those wines up there. And now you being a Pinot guy, I mean, you certainly appreciate the Oregon Pinots, right?
Well, yeah, and they've, you know, I remember the last time I was in Oregon in 2001 for International Pinot Noir Celebration, I did encounter some massive snobbiness in Oregon, too. Someone asked me point blank, what the hell was I doing growing Pinot Noir in California?
Yeah.
It's not on the 45th parallel. It's not on the same, you know, latitude as Burgundy. And, you know, I think Oregon also, you know, experiences a lot of wine snobbery. They like to hitch their wagon very closely to the Burgundian model. And I think that that's disingenuous as well, to say that because Pinot Noir is the most transparent varietal for showing where it's grown, why would you want to say that your region is like another region?
Exactly.
Would you rather want to establish your own regional identity? So, you know, I think Oregon could probably take a play out of our book, which is be a little bit more mellow and a little more globally conscious. We grow 65 different varieties in the San Ynez Valley, and all those 65 varieties are grown all over the world, so we can see what we do here as opposed to what they do with the same varietals in Germany, you know, in Austria, in Italy, in France, in Oregon. And, Pinot Noir in Oregon is a beautiful thing. It's as finicky as you can, but the wineries are doing a better job. Back in the day when I went to Oregon, I would taste a lot of wines with a lot of Brettanomyces and a lot of cellar issues. The wines are becoming very clean. Their viticulture is getting better. And I think I'm seeing sort of in the future Oregon to be a force to contend with in the Pinot Noir world.
Well, I think they are now. I think they are now.
They're doing wonderful things up there. And is there a California bias in the Spectator? Yes, there is. Is there a California bias in Robert Parker's stuff? Probably not, because he's a partner at Beaufrère. So he owns part of Beaufrère. So he believes in Oregon. The Druhine family believes in Oregon. Let's just settle on the fact that everyone is doing their best to show their region the best that they can, and let's travel the world in a glass tonight. That should be the global message of the wine industry.
Okay.
We don't care where you're drinking. We care that you are drinking. And that's what we want to do.
So in the spirit of that very famous statement some years ago, can we all just get along?
Can we all just get along? I'd say, you know, as long as we all have a wine glass in our hand, it's all well and good.
And we get along better as we continue to fill the wine glass. Hey, Wes, thanks for being on the show. Man, I appreciate
what a pleasure.
It. We're gonna have you back here next week, and we're gonna have to talk about what Wes is drinking, because
it's gonna be
from all over the world, right?
Oh well, I'm always traveling the world in a glass. That's the whole idea. Stick your nose in it, and it's just like you go to someplace else.
Okay. That's going to do it for this segment of Grape Encounters. Thanks very much for listening. Thank you, Wes Hagen from Clopepi. You are a genius, and people can find your wines at clopepi.com. Hey, if you want more Grape Encounters Radio, I want to direct you to our website. It's grapeencountersradio.com, and there you will find a complete archive of all of our shows and fairly detailed descriptions of each show's content, so you can actually download a podcast there, or you can listen to it online if you'd like to. We'd also like you to join us on Facebook. We've got a nice Facebook group page. It is Grape Encounters Radio, of course, and all you got to do is do a search there on Facebook, and please become our Facebook friend, because we do send out invitations to special events and try to pass along special opportunities from winemakers, restaurants, whatever. So we'd certainly like to have you there on the Facebook page. Also, on either the Facebook page or through our email link on grapeencountersradio.com, let us know topics that you'd like to discuss or have us discuss on the radio, and we'd be happy to try to accommodate that. And also, if you have some sort of objection to something that we've said, or you want to share your thoughts, or you're in agreement with something that we've talked about, please post your comments there so that we can read them on the air later on. At any rate, we really appreciate you listening to Grape Encounters Radio, and we're back with more in just a second. And we're back with the last little bit of Grape Encounters Radio. I'm your host, David Wilson, and we sure appreciate you listening into the show this week, and we hope you'll be back with us next week at the same time, or you can download any of our shows any old time on the internet. Hey, just go over to grapeencountersradio.com, and you'll see the entire lineup of podcasts there. Actually, you can just download them all at the same time if you want to, and they'll be on your little iPod. You can just listen to them while you're driving or when you have nothing better to do. I was with a friend last night, and we were talking about the show a little bit, and she was asking me some questions about, you know, really, what is the show all about, and what do I believe, and what's the purpose? And, you know, I just wanted to clarify that just a little bit further, because what we wanted to do originally when we created Grape Encounters Radio was to create a show that was for the 95% of the population that drinks wine out there that really doesn't have a real deep wine education. They know what they like. They've been introduced to some good wines, or maybe they're just happy with the $5 or $2 bottle of wine that they're drinking, and it makes them content and it makes them feel good. We are not a show that caters to wine snobs. And as I talked to Wes about earlier in the show, you know, for me, a wine snob is somebody who shows off their knowledge, or in many cases shows off their lack of knowledge, by putting other people down for what they think and what they believe and what they may or may not know. There are really cool, educated people out there, like Wes, who are perfectly happy to let you drink whatever you want to drink, and you do not have to be intimidated to say to a Wes Hagen or a Keith Sarlos, you know, I drink white Zinfandel. It's perfectly okay with these people who live and breathe wine 24/7. And, you know, the real true wine lovers and the really cool people in the business are very accepting of what you like and what you don't like. And they don't care if you pair red wine with fish and white wine with beef, whatever makes you happy. If you like it and you enjoy it, then we certainly encourage it. And I want to really encourage people to play with their wine just like you play with your food, to experiment. We talked to Chef Shelley a couple of weeks ago, who talked to us about actually taking wines from separate bottles and blending them together to make something that, in her opinion, was better than either one of those wines were by themselves. And I think that's perfectly okay. It's whatever turns you on. The main thing for me is the whole point of discovery, that you really, especially with the really good wines, understand what went into making it. Because as I said a few weeks ago, you know, my father used to criticize me, and still does really, for spending too much money on wine, because he'd say, you know, you could buy a bottle of soda pop for, you know, $1 or $2. Why should you pay $60 or $100 or, heaven forbid, $200 for a bottle of wine? Answer is because there was $200 worth of labor that maybe went into that wine. So many people have no idea what is behind the creation of a fantastic bottle of a wine, even behind the creation of a not-so-fantastic bottle of wine. So anyway, I just want to make that point to you all. You know, be daring. Don't be intimidated. If you don't understand wine, march right into the tasting room anyway and have yourself a great experience, and don't worry about what other people think. Now, one last thing. I was talking to Wes earlier on the show about the glass enclosures, and I took a minute at the break to pull some information up that I thought was pretty interesting. As I had mentioned, Whitehall Lane is using the glass enclosures, and they're actually being made by Alcoa. It's called the Alcoa Closure System, made by Alcoa Closure Systems International. They've actually been using them in Europe, and just recently have they come to the U.S. But initially, Whitehall Lane bottled 45,000 bottles of premium 2003 Reserve Cabernet. talk about taking a gamble, because they didn't have anything really to go on in terms of how the wine was going to react and maintain in the bottle. But a couple of years have gone by now, and the truth of the matter is that those enclosures have actually slowed down the aging process, which means that these wines can actually be held for a longer period of time. In fact, in an article in Gizmag, they say that there are several benefits to adopting the Vino Seal glass wine enclosure. The two Whitehall Lane Cabernets that were originally bottled will develop more slowly in the Vino Seal bottle than in a traditional cork-sealed bottle, giving it longer aging potential. However, the greatest benefit is that the possibility of cork taint ruining the bottle aged with a Vino Seal closure system is, get this, zero, and the bottle can also be safely aged standing up. There's something very interesting. Vino Seal is also easy to open, no corkscrew needed. Simply cut or score the foil around the bottle, then pull out the stopper. With this new idea, there also comes a second advantage. It's resealable. Anyway, I can see a lot of advantages to it, and I'm personally going to say that I'm going to support this sealing method over screw caps, because I think it definitely maintains a lot of the romance. It's pretty cool. It's pretty trick looking. I've just got no problem with it. It feels really good to me. It looks really cool. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, go check it out. There are more and more wines that will be showing up with this Vino Seal enclosure, and I think you might like it. And that's it for this edition of Grape Encounters Radio. Back with you next week or anytime on the web. It's David Wilson saying goodbye for now, but you can check us out at grapeencountersradio.com.